The following podcast is sponsored by SuperheroStuff.com.
Welcome, everyone. This episode of H2O. Jason Hunt here, sitting across from Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
We're talking about Glenn Larson. Is that? That's not even plugged in the right place. Does it not exist? That's where it's supposed to be plugged in.
So they get two different qualities of sound. This is all about what we're giving to the audience, because we're givers.
Because we are givers, yes. Good night. You know, it's not even worth starting over. Let's just keep going. Yeah, for those of you who are not aware, Glenn A. Larson, passed away last week, age 77. He was fighting esophageal cancer. Mm-hmm. Terrible way to go.
Yeah.
But we were talking about all of the different things that he has done over the years.
Oh yeah.
And this comes right on the heels of the announcement that the $6 million Man is getting a reboot.
Yeah.
As the $6 billion Man, with Mark Wahlberg of all people. At least it's not Jim Carrey.
Well, you know what? The only thing I would say about that is that if they had done it back when Carrey was doing things like, The Majestic, or The Truman Show, where they were letting him be a dramatic actor, and if they'd played it straight. Now, they wouldn't have done that.
No, they wouldn't.
They wouldn't have. But
because the whole thing, at that point, it was right after Bruce Almighty.
Yeah, I mean Jim Carrey is a very, very good dramatic actor when they let him be, when he picks the right project or somebody comes to him for that. But yeah, no, they wouldn't have let him do that. I'm not a huge Mark Wahlberg fan. I'll be perfectly honest. No offense, Mr. Wahlberg. Congratulations on your successful career. You're not who I would have cast at all.
No.
So I hope I'm.
Who would you have cast? Who would you cast as the $6 billion as Colonel Steve Austin?
Honestly, if you're going to cast, to some degree, he kind of has a passing, and I mean like blur passing resemblance to Lee Majors at that age. If you're going to go with that look, which is kind of what I felt like, it's like, okay, he looks vaguely like do something like someone like Matt Damon, if you're going to do with somebody like that, because quite frankly, Matt Damon's actually proven himself to be a quite good actor, and he's done action.
Yeah,
he's done action quite well. I mean, he's coming back to the Bourne movies,
right?
So,
and there's a possibility that he and Jeremy Renner might do one together.
Well, honestly, Jeremy Renner could do it as well.
Yeah. The thing that bothers me is that we're still in this rut. Mm-hmm. Where we're using the same people over and over and over and over.
Oh, sure. I mean, in an ideal world, you'd cast someone new.
Yeah.
Or you'd find somebody who maybe people know from a television show that is not necessarily, you know, big leading star type, or maybe even just, you know. But the thing is that, right, honestly, I don't know that I would recast the part. I think it was one thing, and I think we can talk some about this too when it comes to Larson, because you look at some of these shows, and they're products of their time very much.
Oh, yes, very much so.
And as much as I loved a lot of these television shows when I was a kid, they do not. Some of them have not aged all that terribly well. Some of them have held up pretty well, but some of them have not.
I didn't realize he did Masquerade.
Oh yeah,
I didn't realize that. I knew he had done. I mean, he'd done.
Oh, good lord! The stuff he has produced is we will hit on some of this list. But the thing is that, you know, I think you almost want to go back to the source material and give a completely fresh interpretation. Go back to the novel Cyborg.
Yes.
And give a completely fresh interpretation, because the novel and the TV movies that started it all.
Mm-hmm.
For $6 Million Man.
A lot different from the series.
Very different. Well, the movies are different from the series, but the movies and the novels, novel is very, very different.
Right. He's more James Bond, less of a moral code.
Right.
He's a little colder, a little more, you know.
Right.
and focus on the mission.
But it's the kind of thing that, you know, you would see that kind of adaptation for television where you would make them a little more family friendly. And I think that
that is
another function of a recurring theme of ours on this show and elsewhere, which is in the era of the big three, when you had your big three networks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now you've got you can do things on HBO or Cinemax or Showtime that you could never do, so you would never have that kind of hero for a television show.
Although Constantine is close.
Well, but there's have you seen that article about the seven things Constantine gets wrong?
No, I haven't.
I'll find it. Okay. But anyway, it's a. It basically.
But in terms of pushing the edge of what you can get on network TV.
Well, but somebody pointed out that honestly, you're getting it's not pushing the edge as much as say a show like Hannibal.
Cannibalism aside,
it should be.
Yeah.
Because of what Constantine is, but that's a topic for another show.
But I'm looking at the list and I watched the Knight Rider pilot. Mm-hmm. Over the weekend again.
Oh, yeah?
And
the original pilot, way back when.
The Michael Long in Vegas getting shot in the face and all that other stuff. Yeah, and I'm like, I didn't really... Herbert Jefferson Jr. was in it, just briefly. He played Michael's partner in Vegas before he got killed. and all of this stuff. I'm like, this is... It still holds up, story-wise, just for the most part. But the one thing that struck me more than anything else out of that whole thing was the music tracks.
Mm-hmm.
Because after Miami Vice, everybody got into using the original recordings, you know, the original, you know, Glenn Frey, the Eagles, Phil Collins, and all that.
Right.
And you listen to the Eagles covered by some studio band, you know, because you know BJ and the Bear was the same thing. Greg Evigan was doing a lot of the songs. You had a lot of the, you know, Fleetwood Mac and the Beatles, all these other popular songs, but they were all cover bands because the licensing and the copyrights and all that other stuff was so different back then.
Oh yeah,
and that it kind of. I don't know if it bothers me that was my big takeaway or not. I was like, it's not the story, it's not the stunts, it's not the car, it's not the action. It's the music. Song, it's the music. It's like, man, we've come a long way.
Well, and it's almost like a loop back around because now they're not cover bands, but it's someone doing a cover. You know what I mean?
Sometimes.
It's not a studio band with generic singer number five.
Right.
It's you know, for a lot of this stuff, you'll get these big shows. And they'll have this track, and you'll recognize it, and you realize it's someone covering it, and you're going, "Well, that's an interesting cover."
Mm-hmm.
But
it'll be something like Taylor Swift covering an old Reba McEntire type thing,
right?
So you've got a pop artist covering a pop artist rather than the studio band,
right? Right.
Which, of course, you know, if you use a studio band, every now and then you'll get a Rhythm Heritage. That was a hit.
That's true.
That was a hit.
That's true. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we never would have gotten that out of a pop group. Well, maybe the Commodores.
Oh, maybe.
That would have been fun. Can you imagine that? Or the Commodores or Earth, Wind, and Fire performing the theme to SWAT?
I want to see that
in the show now. Next time Earth, Wind, and Fire is here in town, I will go and I will make a request. Could you play the theme from SWAT, please? Can you imagine how they would do that?
That would be amazing.
Their interpretation.
That would be great.
That would be funny.
In fact, maybe we need
to send them a note.
There you go.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm looking at this stuff. Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew Mysteries. I didn't realize he was part of that.
Okay. McCloud. I watched McCloud.
Battlestar Galactica.
$6 Million Man. Quincy, M.E.
Yeah.
The Hardy Boys, yeah. Battlestar.
Well, we mentioned BJ and the Bear and Misadventures of Sheriff Lobo, the spinoff there.
Buck Rogers.
And,
Galactica 1980.
Yes. Hey, you know, for everything wrong with that show.
And you can stop right there.
For everything wrong with the show, I will forgive that show.
Will you really?
For the Starbuck episode.
Okay, no. The Starbuck episode was a good episode.
It was a good episode.
In the middle of a terrible, terrible show. You know, if you get one out of your entire run,
yeah.
There's a problem. Oh, it was such a misfire. I mean, really.
Well, and I wonder how much of that was because of the show, because of the network, because of whatever reasons.
If memory serves,
how do you do that when you get to Earth? That's the biggest hurdle that I ever saw with that show for any iteration.
Well, to be perfectly honest, if you're going to do that now, say, and who knows what Bryan Singer's going to do with reboot number the next reboot, because quite frankly, there is something, you know, take. You know, remember, okay, let's cast your mind back to the original TV show version of V.
Yes.
Okay.
Which we were watching the other day.
And selected moments of the reboot of V, because there were moments of the reboot of V which were
now,
interesting.
Are you talking about the miniseries or the series?
I'm talking about the miniseries. Okay. Yep. All right, so take that really serious look at a, you know, it's a reinterpretation of Nazi Germany and you know the Holocaust, all these things.
Right.
Now, if you're going to bring Battlestar, do a sequel to Battlestar Galactica where you bring it to Earth now, just think about it. You could have and play it completely straight. So you'd have, you know, all of a sudden in the skies above Earth, this ragtag colonial fleet being chased by a basically unstoppable robotic army. What impact would that have had? Would that have? I mean, you've got all these different layers. You've got your space opera. You've got your societal change. You've got
the religious implications.
People, religious implications, yeah. Especially if you go back to the original Glenn Larson version, which was heavily influenced by the Mormon faith.
Right.
So, I mean, there's all these different things. You could sit there and go, I mean, that would be. All right, folks, somebody out there, write us
and
this book.
Season one ends with the Celestial Temple showing up.
And yanking the rug out for everything.
Exactly. Everybody wakes up wearing white.
This is a Showtime series. There's no way you could do it on network television. They would go berserk.
Well, it's interesting that the original premise for Galactica 80 had Xavier, Dr. Z, going back in time.
Right.
And Troy and Dylan going back chasing him.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know this, but it turned out that was the inspiration for Donald Belisario, who was working on Galactica 80. That ended up Quantum Leap.
Oh.
Going back in time and fixing things.
Yeah.
That's where that idea came from.
Because
the original concept for Galactica 80 got abandoned, but yeah. Belisario went, work with this.
I didn't know that. Yep. Well, I think, and unfortunately, Galactica 80 also fell victim to that period of time on television where you can have a gun, but you can't shoot anybody with it.
Yeah.
And remember, of course, I had to look. I had to see if Chips was on the list here.
That was
not one of his.
That was Rick Rosner.
But think about it. You know, here's a show about the Highway Patrol where not once in the history of the show does anybody draw a gun.
Right. Well, I think there were some guns drawn. There was never any fired, I don't think.
Okay.
Plenty of wrecks.
Oh, yeah.
Plenty of accidents.
But yeah, I mean, you know. And that was a time on television. That's just what it was.
Yeah, but you had Knight Rider, you had the Fall Guy, Magnum PI, of course, which gave us Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones.
Right. Manimal.
Manimal. Knight Rider 2000.
Uh-huh, yeah.
PSI Love You.
Auto Man. I loved Auto Man so much.
I forgot Desi Arnaz Jr. was in that movie.
I know.
In that show.
It's, you know. But it's very, very interesting. You know, we posted not too long ago Harlan Ellison's call to action.
About Norman Spinrad.
Right. This is a little plug for one of our articles on the site. Harlan Ellison was not a fan of Glenn Larson.
No. As a matter of fact, he called him
Glenn Larson-y. And accused him basically of ripping off just pretty much every one of his successful series.
Well, and he wasn't the only one. There were
Ellison, you know, Ellison is Ellison, and he's not afraid to say it out loud.
But then you have the comparisons. I mean, if you look, you know, Automan, Tron,
right? Fall Guy was from Hooper.
Yep. BJ and the Bear. was Any Which Way But Loose,
yeah,
you know, from Clint Eastwood and Orangutan, you know, Right Turn Clyde,
right?
Right. Remember that? That's the only thing I ever know about any of that.
Alias Smith and Jones. Remember that one? The old Western?
That was his first.
Mm-hmm.
That was his first after he got after he was working with Quinn Martin over on The Fugitive.
Right.
And then he did Alias Smith and Jones. But yes, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
But it was never a secret that it was inspired by Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. It was always, you know, that was like a, you know, everybody
but
knew
see,
that.
Yeah. How many shows now are derivative from something that's out there in the zeitgeist?
Oh well, I think you don't get
away from that.
No,
I mean, if it was Glenn Larson or if it was Belisario or whoever, you know, Stephen Cannell, whoever,
mm-hmm,
somebody would have come up with something that
Larson
did
just
that.
Had a really, really, and I'm going to use the word good because some of these shows were very successful, a really good track record of catching the moment,
yeah,
and developing a show from that moment. So. Whereas some of this stuff, you might have, you know, you may not necessarily get the, oh, well, this is, you know, yes, this was inspired by, but it might be several, you know, years. They go back and look at something and, you know, do whatever. Yeah. Larson was on it.
Yeah.
You know, you'd have Star Wars comes out, Battlestar Galactica, you know. this stuff was, I mean, he was very, very good at that. And that's not necessarily a bad thing for a producer to be.
Right.
I don't, you know, for... I can't necessarily disagree with Harlan Ellison on this. However, you look at his track record. You look at the shows he created. You look at the success of some of those shows.
Oh yeah.
You know, Battlestar Galactica was only on for a year. You look back at those original episodes, and you're like, "Wow, some of these are terrible." But you know something?
There was something there.
There was something there. It caught the imagination of a generation of kids.
Yep.
And some adults. And there's a reason why so many people tuned into the reboot when it was just when it was the movie that
yeah,
was hopefully
the miniseries
gonna,
on sci-fi.
That was hopefully going to be
yeah
a series. It wasn't, you know, it's because there was this memory. We all loved that show, even though we can look back at it and go,
which is why in the miniseries you see the original Cylon robot.
Oh yeah.
And you hear the theme, mm-hmm, and you see the old Vipers, and you get all of that in that first 2 hours, because they recognize there is a nostalgia factor, and we do need to take that into account and incorporate that somehow into this thing, because the rest of it doesn't look anything like the old one.
Right, and I think that in many ways it was a nostalgia factor handled well.
Yeah.
Because I think there's...
Which doesn't always happen.
No,
And we can talk about some of those misfires.
Oh, yeah,
after
yeah
the break. We are gonna take a break. We're gonna let you listen to a message from our sponsor, superherostuff.com.
They have lots and lots of amazing things over there.
They do. Yes. And we put in our order.
We did.
Yes. And that's on the way. And we'll probably have to put in another order because there's stuff.
More
we
stuff.
We want to get some more stuff. We need some more bobbleheads.
Lots and lots of amazing licensed material for superheroes and television and movies and
comic books,
all sorts of cool things.
Yes. So we are going to take a break, and we will be right back after this on H2O.
You're listening to H2O on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
That is the sound of another satisfied customer getting his superhero stuff teleported to his doorstep from superherostuff.com. When you need your Batcave or Fortress of Solitude to be bigger on the inside, jump on the World Wide Web and head over to superherostuff.com at warp speed. Licensed merchandise from across the fandom multiverse.
Oh, this is so cool!
Only at superherostuff.com.
Hey everyone, Leslie Walker here, inviting you to join me and the rest of the Sci-Fi for Me crew every week as we dive into the details of the TV shows that you and we love. Did you miss your favorite show this week? Or perhaps you need someone to talk to about that latest plot twist and the implications. Well, maybe your friends don't geek out over shows like Supernatural, Grimm, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. like what your friends over at Sci-Fi for Me do, but hey, it's what we live for. So join us for the latest at scififorme.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
Our transmitters are made from hand-wavium. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Back on H2O, talking about the career of Glenn Larson, who was the creator of so many shows from our childhood.
Oh, yes.
Battlestar Galactica, Knight Rider, let's see here, Nightman. Remember Nightman?
Oh, yeah.
One West Waikiki. Remember that one?
Nope. I don't remember that one at all.
The Fall Guy, we talked about The Fall Guy, we've talked about Knight Rider. Cover Up, don't know what that one was. That was something I didn't read. Masquerade.
Yeah.
Which was right after Star Trek II.
Oh,
and
sure.
The only reason that I watched Masquerade because it was Kirstie Alley in a James Bond series. It was like, oh, this is gonna be good. Because it was Kirstie Alley. This is, you know, this is back in the day when Kirstie Alley was Kirstie Alley.
Yeah.
You wanted to see Kirstie Alley. And of course this, you know, Greg Evigan was in it, Rod Taylor was in that. It was a decent show.
Sure.
Pretty good spy show. But it was similar to the one, what was that one with John Eric Hexham and Jennifer,
okay.
It was after Voyagers. John Eric Hexham did a show where they were spies. Let me.
Huh. Okay.
Because this is that's where he died. Because you remember he shot himself. He was playing around with a blank gun.
Oh.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things where you know, he wasn't supposed to be doing what he was doing.
Yeah. Guns are not toys. just as a reminder.
Oh, that was Cover Up.
Oh, was it? Was it?
I didn't realize that Glenn Larson did that one. Yeah, okay, that was Cover Up, because Cover Up was him and Jennifer O'Neill.
Mm.
And they played spies, and they pretended to be married, I think. So it was one of those things where they in between scenes, and he pulled up the prop gun. And doing a little Russian roulette with it, and pow, and the wad hit him in the head. Hit himself. He shot himself in the head. Yeah, it was a complete accident.
Another reminder: blanks
are not. These things are
harmless.
They're just as dangerous in certain circumstances.
Oh yeah, well, they are just right, especially if
So that's what that was. I had forgotten that was a Larson one.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, he does so many of them. Quincy was one of his.
Yeah,
that was a good one.
That was very good. You know, I mean, let's be honest. There's some good stuff here. There's, you know, this. He produced some really. He produced shows which we remember. I mean, there's a lot of television which is very easily forgotten.
Well, and not only did he produce a lot of shows that we remember, but he produced a lot of shows that inform our childhood, especially in terms of the genre. Because, you know, he was doing superhero shows, and he was doing spy shows, and he was doing, you know, talking cars and flying motorcycles and, you know, all sorts of stuff.
Shapeshifters and Manimal.
Which was just the man from Atlantis. Not really. Let me take that back.
No, and actually, I've always thought that somebody should go back and give Man from Atlantis another try.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's such a neat concept that
What did I do? I had done back, this was probably about a year ago, year and a half ago. Way, way, way back. I had done an article on shows that needed a reboot that haven't gotten a reboot yet.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're all in, you know, everybody's in reboot mode.
Right.
Right, for the last 5-10 years, how many we got. This was actually January 2012 when I did this article. And I was talking about all of these different shows that hadn't been touched yet.
Right.
Because now we've got, you know, they're making movies based on board games. I mean, come on. That's not an indication of creative bankruptcy, I don't know what it is.
And the fact that they're actually making money.
Yeah, that's even sad. That's that, Candyland. I mean, come on.
I would much rather watch a film about Candyland than the horror disaster that was the Ouija board game. Oh, yeah, Ouija.
But yeah, on my list, Man from Atlantis, a new version of Lost in Space that's actually similar to the pilot from the 65 show.
And you know what? The movie version, when they did the movie version,
kind
of the first half of it.
Yeah.
Is
before it got weird.
And even after it got weird, that's one of my guilty pleasure films. It's got so many things wrong with it, but I can watch it again and again just because.
You're just watching for Heather Graham.
Yes. Okay. There's that. and Gary Oldman being evil.
Well, but how many movies is Gary Oldman evil?
But he's good at it.
A new thing.
It's a
yeah. Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Star Hunter.
Ooh. Okay.
Space 1999, which they're still talking about.
They
maybe
keep
one of these
about,
days.
But I'm gonna not believe in it.
Time Tunnel. I can see a time tunnel.
Yeah.
You could do a franchise series of movies on Time Tunnel.
Yeah, you could.
I Dream of Jeannie. Arc 2. Remember Arc 2?
See, Arc 2, I think they would completely destroy I Dream of Jeannie, but Arc 2 has promise.
Yeah. Jason of Star Command.
See? In the right hand.
Only nowadays, you just call it Star Command.
You call it
Star
Command.
You do it completely straight.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And then, of course, my all-time number one that I would love to see somebody do something, even though I would wince.
Yeah.
Electra Woman and Dyna Girl.
Well, you know, there is the Marquee Post.
No. I don't mean that one. I mean just do a complete...
Just do a complete one?
Full-up reboot.
I have great fondness for the one with Marquee Post, though.
Well, yeah, but you've got a twisted sense of humor.
Well, yes, yes. And your point is what?
What would you say is the best is the one Glenn Larson show that probably had the most impact on you growing up?
Oh God, see that's a tough one because I was in that weird period. I don't know, it's not really a weird period.
Was.
Yeah, thank you. and okay, the Western was dying.
Yeah.
Okay. It was that period where we had there had been Westerns for like 20 years, but it was in the 70s. It was crashing.
Yeah.
So really you saw the death of the Western until Unforgiven came out.
Silverado.
Well, okay, Silverado. But yeah. But you know what? Again, that's one of those films. How many people actually saw Silverado? It was one of those, you know, it's a great movie and highly recommend it.
Yeah.
But it was one of those films that seemed to fly under the radar, especially when you look at how many people are in that film who are fantastic, just amazing actors.
It took me 15 years, give or take, to find the soundtrack to that movie on CD.
Really?
Yeah. I looked for it from the day it came out.
Mm-hmm.
Because back then, you know, it was all albums or cassettes or whatever.
Sure, sure.
And for some reason, I didn't have it. And I was looking, and I realized one day I didn't have it in my collection.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I need to go get that soundtrack. Because I had just watched the movie. I was like, let's go see. And I was searching for a CD for that soundtrack for years until I finally found one. And it was one of these reissues. It was I think I had to order it. I don't even think it was anything in a store.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those. I finally found it and I had to get it because otherwise it'd probably be another 15 years before I found it again. But yeah, that was you're right. The Westerns were coming to an end.
Yeah, and but the thing was, my dad so much of my education with books and movies and things like, you know, my father was a big, huge influence. So I got to watch a lot of the classic Westerns.
Yeah.
And, but MacLeod was just, I mean, there was what, 70 to 77. So basically until I was like 7 years old, this show about this, Western modern cowboy in New York City, was just, I mean, I absolutely love that show. The Virginian, of course, again, stuff looking back at $6 Million Man, obviously.
Yeah.
That was one of those things. And I had to go back and watch the original movies because my memories of the movies were much fuzzier than the TV show itself.
Mm-hmm.
The Bigfoot episode, the tunnel, the twirling tunnel thing, that image never went away. The Hardy Boys Mysteries. Okay, that was I was a huge, huge, huge fan of the books. And so when the TV show came along, and yet strangely, it never quite seemed to bother me that the TV show and the books had just the basic framework the same.
Well, they were different mysteries.
Oh, sure. But it's just somehow you really didn't quite sink in that there was no way these guys were teenagers. Speaking of Parker Stevenson.
He was married to Kirstie Alley.
He was. They actually, Kirstie Alley is from Wichita.
Yes.
Where I grew up. I used to work for her dad. My biology instructor in high school is her sister, Mrs. Boffman.
We need to arrange an interview.
Mrs. Boffman would always point out that Mrs. Boffman was, and Mrs. Boffman, if you hear this, I'm sorry, this is going to sound bad. I loved your class. You're really cool. But she was built broader, okay? Mm-hmm. When Kirstie Alley went from being the waif,
yes,
of Star Trek II, which she has said publicly that they basically were, you know, more or less starving her into that look.
Right.
And that's just, you know, that's a Hollywood thing. We hear this. This is not the first time we've heard that. Carrie Fisher has had a few things to say on the subject. When Kirstie Alley got broader, that's more the genetic disposition. So Mrs. Boffman told us. But they would come and visit our school because they were friends with my theater instructor. They would come to visit during my biology class with Mrs. Boffman. I never met them because they would be across on the other side of the school. And then after my class, she'd go to lunch with her sister and her sister's then husband, Parker Stevenson. So it'd be like, I know they were here. I never see
them. Can't prove it.
Oh, it was over and over. It happened all the time. Oh, wow. But anyway, neat family. I am Buck Alley. Was the dad of...
We should see if we could get her to Planet Comic-Con.
I'll have to see if I can track her down. But anyway...
And invite the sister.
There we go.
And they can tell stories on each other on stage.
Wouldn't it be fun? But...
And you can tell biology class stories.
There were some good ones. This was the 80s, kids. This was the era of the first real discussions about sex ed with the hope that teenagers wouldn't be stupid, and realizing that we better try and help them not be stupid because they're stupid. Fun stories, not for this today, what was the name of the Parker Stevenson series TV series that it really didn't get off the ground?
It was
Quest. Quester? No, Quester Tapes was something else.
No, the Quester Tapes was a movie.
That's a different thing.
That Mike Farrell.
Mike
Farrell was in with. Mm-hmm. Who played the robot?
Geez.
But that ended up actually becoming Data.
Right.
And a lot of the original stories were centered around this possibility of somewhere in the backstory, Data was a Quester. Mm-hmm. Android. It didn't ever come out. You're talking about Probe.
Probe, that's it. I thought that was a really neat idea that never quite got off the ground.
No.
I wanted his warehouse.
Just seven episodes.
Yeah, I wanted his warehouse really bad.
I think for me, it was Battlestar Galactica.
Sure. Oh, I'm sorry, and Buck Rogers.
Buck Rogers. Yeah. Battlestar and Buck Rogers. Those were the two.
Yeah.
Because I remember it was 1978. We were living in Little Rock, Arkansas. Mm-hmm. And that was the year that my dad threw his back out. And he was flat for a lot of the summer and going into the fall. And when that show debuted, it was, you know, we'd get home from church and it was right there and it was on.
Mm-hmm.
And I could be remembering this wrong, but I remember being in the living room, Dad's lying on the couch, and I'm in there, and we're watching Battlestar Galactica. I don't know that he appreciated it, because you know, he can't get up and go.
Right.
You know, he's watching it by default.
Trapped.
But, you know, it was one of those things. This was really cool, because I'd seen, you know, we'd seen Star Wars in the theater.
Sure.
And this was Star Wars on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a... You know, the special effects were impressive and grand. And
especially for television.
Oh, yeah. And especially for television at the time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you wouldn't think that people could do this kind of thing.
And you didn't notice how much they recycled the same shots.
No.
It didn't register.
No, because those shots they made sense in the terms of the story.
Right.
You know, it's a ship. Mm-hmm. You're going to show the ship. Okay. Well, he's banking to port. Well, what does that look like? It looks like the same
exactly
thing every
right
single time he's going to bank to port. You know, I mean, how many times did that Cylon Raider come in and crash into the hangar deck?
Every
single time.
Because let's face it, Cylons were terrible pilots.
I know, but it was
took three of them to fly the thing. What's going on there?
But it hit the exact same place every single time when it came into the hangar.
Explosions in those days were expensive because you really blew something up.
That's right. They were all practical effects back then.
And you know,
and even then, the $6 Million Man, the speed effects on $6 Million Man were better than Smallville. I will go to my grave saying that. You know, the Smallville, you know, fast motion, the speedy, the blur.
The problem with Smallville and the problem with a lot of those shows is that they...
All of the digital stuff just doesn't always work.
Well, there
is something to be said for doing it practical.
Well, there's a lot to be said for doing it practical. But if you're going to commit to doing... a show where you have to have that kind of effects work,
mm-hmm,
then you have got to have the backing of a studio that is going to let you do that. You can't you can't half-ass it. And unfortunately, for shows like, you know what, some of the stuff with Smallville was momentum. The show just had it. It just kept going.
Yeah.
And it was an object in motion.
10 years, and it shouldn't have gone anywhere near that long.
No, it should have gone like five, and then five strong years and out.
Well, and part of the problem with that one is they tried to shoehorn so much of the Superman mythology into the years before he was Superman.
Sort of like Gotham.
Gotham
has the potential to go that route.
Gotham's got that potential, but I think as long as they don't do too much with Bruce Wayne, I think it'll be okay. Because all of these villains had to start somewhere.
But now we've got Harvey Dent on the show, and it's kind of like we're shoehorning.
Yeah.
I don't even know if shoehorning is the right word. No, it's not, because we're just putting in...
But he's an assistant district attorney. He's got time to get older. Now, granted, in all of the past mythology, you know, all the past versions, he's been of an age the same as Bruce Wayne. They've all been similar, you know, age-wise.
Now, admittedly, you know, most
they
of
didn't have to be.
No, but and a lot of these folks are ending up probably about 10 years, 15 years older than Bruce, which is not that huge of an age difference,
right?
Really, but at the same time, it's kind of like, you know, we could actually have some other characters before we have the entire Batman cast on the show while Bruce is still going, I'm a small child. I could be smacked with it.
I want to see Lee Merriweather show up doing something. I don't care what.
Yeah,
just have him come in for something.
I am on board with this. I think that is an excellent plan, and I think they should.
She could be Harvey Bullock's mother. Anyway, yeah, that's Gotham. That's not a Glenn Larson thing. But you look at the landscape of genre shows now compared mm-hmm. to then.
Oh, sure.
And, you know, things like Battlestar Galactica winning a Peabody.
Right.
That kind of stuff never happened when, you know, in Larson's heyday or Belisario or any of those guys. You could maybe get a Hugo or you get an Emmy, but you're not going to get a Peabody. You're not going to get the recognition of the hoity-toity intellectual crowd you would now.
But look at but think about some of these shows. I mean, and we've talked about this before. This was a time when episodic television was self-contained stories every week.
Yeah, no arcs.
There were no arcs. There was no character development.
Well, Galactica had a little bit of that because there is an arc.
Well, there is
a little bit of an arc going toward Earth.
Where
they're going to go.
You know, but at the same time, Starbuck at the end of the show is Starbuck at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
Apollo.
And Starbuck in Galactica 80. It's the same Starbuck.
Which is, you know, again, the only hope that show had, and it wasn't enough. But there really wasn't, you know, the characters didn't change. And that was the same with most television. And if you go back and you look at things like the $6 Million Man,
yeah,
you know, you didn't really get the character. Now, That said, the show was able to build on things and have like this, you know, the bionic woman.
Right. And then the bionic marriage and all that.
You can have that kind of stuff, right.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it was crisis of the week, solution of the week, rinse, repeat, right. You know? And you look, go back and look at all this stuff. You look at McCloud, Virginian, Six Million Dollar Man, Quincy, Hardy Boys.
And Quincy was just a procedural.
Sure.
I mean, really, it was a cop show, but he was a medical
right.
examiner.
But, I mean, you look at a lot of this stuff, and it's all... Now, Magnum P.I.,
yeah,
did have some very, you know, did have some themes running through where there was some kind of little things like that that ended up being some growth in the character. But
the main one of those being, of course, was who is Robin Masters?
That's right.
Because that was the question throughout the entire show. Who is Robin Masters?
But then you look at things like, you know, The Fall Guy, you know, Knight Rider, you know, these were not shows that were...
Although,
as fond as we are of these shows, and I think as influential as they were for a whole range of people who became creators,
mm-hmm. And that's not necessarily a good thing because these people are the ones who are going back saying, "Let's remake Knight Rider."
Well,
Let's do Starsky and Hutch on the big screen.
I don't know if that were that so much creators. Well, it's the studio executives.
Yeah, it's the people, and I have said this before, the people who are coming up with these ideas to reboot and reboot and reboot and reboot, especially stuff from the 70s mm-hmm. and the early 80s, mm-hmm. those are the people who are our age or a little bit older who are trying to hang on to their youth.
Right.
And they're going back to shows that they watched when they were kids, and they're handing it off to somebody in a different generation to write a script. And the generation is looking at it going, oh, this is silly, so let's make it silly. Then there's not an appreciation in the creative parts of it. The appreciation for these shows is different, which is why Starsky right. and Hutch and Dukes of Hazzard and Bewitched and Land of the Lost were all crap movies, because the people writing them and directing and putting them together didn't grow up with them. They're looking at it with the jaundiced eye of the historical perspective, looking at this show mm-hmm. like, oh, this was so silly. But at the time, they weren't.
Yes, I know what because, you mean. I know what you mean.
Maybe for the grown-ups.
Sure.
But for us, in our formative years, they were not.
Yeah. Well, it's like Battlestar Galactica, you know, or Buck Rogers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at the premise of Battlestar Galactica. I mean, that's a heavy idea.
Oh, it's very
genocide.
Heavy. Yeah. Uh-huh.
I mean, this is a war where robots are trying to kill the entire human race. This
sure.
is before Terminator,
mm-hmm.
you know, which yeah, may explain where Terminator came from.
That's a lot a more. Piece. Well, that's where Terminator came from, a lot of different places.
Yeah. But I was just saying, is those concepts were coming on TV
oh, yeah.
before they ever hit the movies and made it big in the movies.
Oh, sure. Well, I think that what's what, you know, for all the fact that the dictates of how TV entertainment was. I mean, there are, you look at a lot of these things and that there's only so much you could have done. And the fact that as much was done with some of these shows, there were very strict boundaries of what you could and couldn't show and talk about and mm-hmm. subject matter. And, you know, Archie Bunker, you know, before the show, Jason and I were talking about, heard an interview with Norman Lear today on NPR, and Archie Bunker traumatized people.
Oh yeah,
because they were talking about things you just didn't talk about on. We don't talk. Oh, you know,
on
no
network
on network
TV.
Network TV.
Yeah.
And now, sometimes, well, if you're doing a drama, and you don't talk about some of these things. Themes where you talk, you know, you ignore the cultural things on, like, say, a serious drama, the critics yeah. will tear you apart, and audiences just won't watch it because they'll want that from you, because and you know, these some of these things tread ground that simply had not been tread before.
Right.
It had been okay. What was there really wasn't much in the way of science fiction on television. for a long time.
Yeah.
In the U.S., the British were still doing it.
Well, you had in that time. Well, in the '70s, you had. I mean, Galactica was it, and then Buck Rogers.
Yeah.
And because up until that point, it was just Star Trek and reruns.
Right.
Space 1999. Yeah, that was another one.
That was not
an American production.
No, that was
Gerry Anderson over in the UK.
Yeah.
So, you didn't have a lot of American science fiction outside of Star Trek.
Well, and I think, I think he recognized at the time, and like a lot of this stuff, yes, you can say that he was maybe a little opportunistic. Which is kind of your job as a producer, by the way.
Yeah, you come up with an idea you think is going to work.
That works. That's a criticism and a praise. So that's kind of what you do.
It's mixed.
It is. But at the same time, he recognized that Star Wars changed things.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it kind of came back to bite him a little bit because he did get sued.
Yeah.
He did some suing himself.
He sued Universal a couple of different times.
Because he felt like he wasn't getting his fair share of the money, considering what he'd done for them.
Well, and given Hollywood accounting practices, may or may not have been the case.
Oh, yeah, because, folks, if you weren't aware...
Nothing in Hollywood ever makes money.
Yeah, ever. Despite the fact that you can...
We don't make money either.
Follow the money. Well, we're not in Hollywood, though.
That's true. I don't use any Hollywood accountant.
We really don't make money.
We really don't.
We can't afford a Hollywood accountant. Yeah. If we could afford a Hollywood accountant, we still wouldn't make any money.
All right. We're gonna head out of here now. That's going to do it for us here at H2O. Timothy Harvey here.
Yes. And hey, folks, thanks for listening to us. We'll kind of walk down memory lane on this. Larson made a lot of stuff that we grew up with. I mean, it is in some ways kind of the end of an era. You don't get people like that anymore.
Well, because Larson's gone, Cannell's gone.
Well, and Lear's going to be gone. He's still going strong. He just put out his book, but he's not.
Is Belisario still alive? Is he the only one out of that crowd? That's...
Oh wow! I honestly don't know.
That's entirely possible. Wow.
Hang on, folks. We're not quite gone.
I think he is. Yeah, he's still alive.
Okay. So Jason and I talk a lot about back in the day, and we talk about the stuff that inspired us, for good or for ill. Larson made a lot of the stuff that shaped the way we view the genre.
Yeah, and a lot of that's why we're doing what we do now.
Exactly.
Making movies and talking about stuff and shilling for superhero stuff.
Waiting for the Fast and Furious crowd to reboot Knight Rider.
Oh, that would be a hoot, wouldn't it?
Actually, that might work.
I have been seeing some comments from people wanting to see a resurgence of the trucker stories, like BJ and the Bear, Moving On.
Really? Remember
Moving On with Claude Akins?
Yeah.
Yeah. Those things. Convoy. Those kind of stories.
But didn't
the cross country stuff?
Clearly, we're not out yet. But didn't they just try and do that with the cross country race movie, the TV show that they tried to do a couple years back now?
I don't remember.
But it had Nathan Fillion in it, and it was a great cast. But it was a cross country race.
Never heard of it. I'll have to look it up.
Yeah, it actually aired. And that tells you something right there that you didn't hear about it because it kind of crashed and burned real quick. I don't think it was written very well, but it had a hell of a cast.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to go back and look that up.
Yeah. So, anyway.
All right. So, if you have your own Glenn Larson memories that you would like to share, or if you have a comment about the show, or if you've got an idea for a topic that we could cover at some future date, you can send us an email. h2o@scififorme.com is where you can send that. Or you can leave a comment. And if you are listening to this because somebody shared it with you, then first of all, thanks for joining us for a first time. And you can subscribe to us through various different services, iTunes, DoubleTwist, OneCast, Stitcher. And also we have the RSS feed over on our main site, which is scififorme.com. We are on all of the social media, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Instagram, Google+, YouTube, Tumblr, and that's going to do it for us. We will be back again with another episode next week. Thanks very much for listening to this episode of H2O.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2014 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.